Rodgers lands in the open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this gets pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
What is up, Bison fans? This is your host, Ross Uglum, publisher of the Bison Report on 24/7 Sports. And what a week it has been. A massive, massive, and we've already gone over this, win over Youngstown State in football. And North Dakota State kicking off their basketball season as defending Summit League champions. If you haven't been living under a rock and you've been paying attention to what's been going on over at Bison Report, you know that I was live and in living color in K-State in Manhattan, Kansas, in the Little Apple for NDSU's opener against the defending Big 12 champs. So it was defending Summit League champs against the defending Big 12 champs. And the game never really got off to the type of start that North Dakota State was hoping for. Tyson Ward had two fouls in the first 53 seconds of the game, and instantly North Dakota State was kind of playing from behind. But, you know, as we pointed out, or as I pointed out on the Bison Report and actually in a video with Go Power Cat publisher Tim Fitzgerald, Rocky Cruiser was a big, big part of what went right for North Dakota State in the first half, extending K-State's man-to-man defense out to the three-point line on the five-man. Obviously, Rocky, the five-man for North Dakota State, knocked down four three-pointers in the game, but was a big, big key in the first half and stretched out that Kansas State defense as much as they did get stretched out, which led to a 22-21 North Dakota State lead at the half. Unfortunately for the Bison, their shooting just never really improved. They ended up shooting right around 27%, both on twos and on threes. Were not particularly effective at the free throw line, and just let. I'm pretty sure I remember Kansas State knocking down five of their first six or six of their first seven field goal attempts in the second half, and North Dakota State gave up the lead right away and just never really got it back. Cartier Jada, who you might remember from the windmill dunk to put away KU last year for K-State, that was all over SportsCenter, all over social media. You don't even have to be paying attention to what's going on in Gene Taylor land to appreciate that one. But Cardi was big. 23 points, really became kind of a matchup problem. Started hitting some step-back jumpers, which for you know, a shorter defender like Vinny Shahid is difficult sometimes to close out on, to cause a problem with. And, ultimately it's what Coach Richmond said. There's no moral victories. North Dakota State win in Manhattan, anticipating and expecting to win. They didn't get it done. So, there were no smiles. There was no, happiness to just be in it. NDSU wanted to go down, win that game, and they didn't get it done. There's no two ways about it. That was the ultimate goal. As I first kind of reported on Tuesday, North Dakota State has made their redshirting decisions as far as the basketball program is concerned right now. They're going to go ahead and redshirt freshman big man Noah Christensen. That one is expected. Noah's got a long frame, has a lot of skill for a kid that tall, but certainly I think is a guy that they want in the weight program. They want Jason Miller to hang some muscle on that frame. They want the young man from Breckenridge, Minnesota, to be ready next year. And then kind of a surprising move, but one that we've talked about on the Bison Report before, Jarius Cook is going to redshirt as well. Jarius is a young man who lost his red shirt last season, but now is going to red shirt this year and remove himself from the same class as Jackson Notek, which I think is big for the future of the team. You look at four spots in this rotation that are going to come up next year. I think Jarius Cook's a really good player to potentially fill one of those spots as a sophomore next season, as a redshirt sophomore, and get some meaningful time as they do use Jackson Notek this season moving forward, and are going to probably just have him as a four-year guy. As a true sophomore, Jackson played in both the Kansas State and Mayville State game tonight. The Mayville State game obviously was a counter, and that was actually a game in which Mayville State kind of kept it close for a little bit. NDSU, I think at one point, was 1-for-12 or 1-for-13 from three-point land, continuing their slight struggles from downtown. I mean, those aren't slight. Those are just regular struggles. But, you know, for a while there, they were in rough-ish shape, only with a 1 or a 2-point lead against the Mayville State. Ultimately pushed that to around 12 at the break, and then absolutely blew the doors off the Comets in the second half, which is frankly exactly what you need to see a team like NDSU do to a non-D1. I mean, that has to be the standard expectation if you're playing against Mayville State. One thing that I did notice, though, is Tyler Witts and his ability to be that traditional back-to-the-basket post-scorer, defender, tough guy, rebounder. That showed down in Kansas State. The other redshirting decision, I guess, also we need to touch on is Malik Harden-Hayes, who's not going to redshirt. They are going to use the young man from Moorhead. They did tonight, and they did against Kansas State. And both he and Witts had a nice beginning to their Bison careers. I thought Witts got into double digits today with his scoring. He was really bullying some of the smaller defenders at Mayville State. And there will be some smaller defenders in the Summit League, not necessarily at the Mayville State level, but there are going to be 6'6", 6'7", guys. You know, those level of players are going to be defending occasionally Tyler Witts, just because there are plenty of teams that play small in the same way that North Dakota State occasionally plays small. And the last thing we want to do is just offer a sincere congratulations to friend of the program, Tyson Ward. We've known Tyson for a long, long time on this show. I believe because he was a late signing period kid, I believe he was a guest after he committed to North Dakota State on one of the very first episodes of Bison Report Radio. Called in from Tampa in the late signing period and was on the podcast, and boy, has just exceeded any expectation that you could have for a kid. Has joined the 1,000 points club at North Dakota State with basically his entire senior season to go. So congrats, Tyson. We're really happy for you, really proud of you. And North Dakota State wins this bad boy by 40, I believe, 93-53. Interesting, and we're going to have Zazzy here. Nate Zastro is coming up to Fargo for a little bit of a boys' weekend, so we're excited. And the Bison take on either Cal Poly or Cal Davis. They take on one of the Cals on Monday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon for a little Veterans Day matchup. A really weird tip time. It is Poly. November 11th, Monday at 1 p.m. So hopefully if you guys aren't at work, you can make your way to the Shack, because there's going to be a little afternoon basketball on Veterans Day. All right. Time now to bring on Bison Report football analyst Trevor Gebhardt, who, you know, spent about 4 minutes of our pre-production meeting telling me about the catch that he made in softball. So if you guys came to the Bison Report radio podcast to hear about Trevor Gebhardt's softball highlights, you are in luck.
Ross, buddy, I know we always give the people what they want. That's what we're about here. And I know everyone's on the edge of their seats about how the Huddapeel softball team is doing in the Rock Hill, South Carolina Rec Fall Softball Men's League. And I'm happy to say we have the 2 seed in the playoffs, courtesy of a diving catch. I have been told by a seasoned vet it was the best catch he's ever seen on those fields. We'll confirm that next week with more people. But I only have about 3 more of those left in my entire athletic career. It was very painful. I impressed myself with it. It helped us to an extra innings, one-run victory, which ultimately got us a two-seed and quote-unquote home field advantage to the finals. But it was a great play, but I am in pain, buddy. That one hurt.
Yeah, I believe it. Like, you know, these things get more difficult as we get older, but Trevor Gebhardt, playmakers make plays, and that's obviously what happened on the softball diamond, is a playmaker made a play. Speaking of playmakers, I got to ask you, I mean, is the Jerry Rice Award already on its way to Fargo? I know you talked a little bit about in your midweek thoughts that you thought Trey Lance needed serious consideration for the Peyton Award. But I just don't see that coming to a freshman. We've obviously seen that they're very hesitant, the voters, to give it to anyone from North Dakota State. NDSU kind of viewed as a machine and more a sum of its parts than, you know, anybody that possesses a true star player. Kyle Emanuel had to put some really eye-popping stats out there to win an individual award as a Bison. That's not really what the voters tend to do, but I don't think that they can make a good enough excuse to keep the Jerry Rice Award away from Trey Lance.
If anyone else wins the Jerry Rice Award besides Trey Lance, I think the award completely loses its shine. I think it's been a fantastic award. The award was actually first came out my freshman year. Redshirt freshman year, Terrence West won it that year from Towson. We, of course, saw in the 2013 national finals, and has had a decent NFL career. But there's no question to me that Trey Lance wins that award this year. I do not. If there is another freshman in the country that's even close to being on par, I haven't heard of it. I'm not aware of it, so I'd be completely blind. But, yes, that award will be coming to Fargo. I don't think there's any question. In full disclosure, I even wrote that in my midweek takes before I even knew he was on the watch list for the Walter Payton Award. I think there is some credibility there. You have one of the best players on the best team in the country, let alone the quarterback. Unfortunately, the Walter Payton Award is more statistical driven than we would like to see it. I went back and looked at some of the previous winners and certainly some standout names within that, but over the last 5 to 7 years, you can tell there's a definite shift in the statistics weighing a factor into that award. I don't know exactly what's causing it. I think it's probably due in part that it became an offensive player-only award when the Buck Buchanan started. I don't know the exact year that the Buck Buchanan Award started, but I know for a fact that when that award first launched, Walter Payton became the offense player, and then the Buck Buchanan became the defense player, of course. So if it was treated as the Heisman, which I think a lot of people view it that way, including myself, and I think that's where the confusion comes in, is because that's the easiest way to explain the award. So if someone doesn't understand what the Walter Payton Award is, that's kind of your quick elevator pitch. Hey, it's the Heisman of FCS. Well, the Heisman goes to the best player in college football. Well, the Heisman typically goes to one of the best players on the best team, kind of how that rolls. So if it was viewed the same as the Heisman, Trey Lance would certainly be a candidate. I think he could be a finalist still. He doesn't have the eye-popping stats, but if you break it down and look at some of his efficiency numbers, and I know you're the big yards adjusted per attempt, whatever that is, which is a very valuable QB statistic, he ranks very high in all those. He ranks second efficiency in the country right now. So I think there is a valid argument for him winning it. But like you said, it's hard to give that to a freshman. I don't necessarily agree with it. Obviously, a little bit of bias involved. But if Trey Lance could bring home two nationally driven awards, I also wouldn't be surprised either. So certainly something to look out for in the future. And it should be fun to see how that progresses over between now and when they announce that award in Frisco.
Yeah, and I think, too, that's something that I got to say I appreciate, just in the sense that I kind of think the Heisman is a sham. I think the best player in college football this year is Chase Young, and he doesn't have a shot in the world at the Heisman Trophy, if we're being honest. I think the last defensive player to do it might even still be one Charles Woodson, who got a lot of that based on some special teams work and some, you know, return getting in the offense. I think even a little bit with Michigan, he was viewed as more than just a defensive player. I think Adomican Sue, his last year at Nebraska, got some buzz, but again, never seriously considered. At least the FCS is honest about what they're doing. And this is the Peyton Award winner. It goes, or this is the Peyton Award. It goes to the offensive guy, you know, our highs, and here's the buck. And they're not pretending that the Peyton Award is this overall award that has any chance of going to a defensive player. They just name, you know, and I appreciate that, because like I said, the Heisman Trophy is a farce that mostly goes to either, I mean, I would say 4 out of every 5 times it goes to a quarterback. And if it's not a quarterback, then it's a running back. And like, all right, well, what if a left tackle was the best player in football? What if, you know, a pass rusher is the best player in football? What if it's a corner, and we're just not living that life? But you know what? That's a long-term rant that is probably not the place for this. And one thing I want to ask you about, speaking of long-term rants, is this top 10 from the committee, which surprisingly doesn't seem to be inspiring a lot of ranting. I think the overall FCS media, overall FCS fan area, fan nation is pretty pleased with what the committee has put forward. And I'll just, if you guys haven't had a chance to look at it, I'll quick list it off for you here. We've got NDSU football first. I think that one's pretty obvious. Then James Madison, then Weber, and then the Jackrabbits of South Dakota State. So those would be your top four seeds. Then Sacramento State, UNI, Central Arkansas, and Montana would be rounding out your top eight, your home field second round hosts. And if you're paying attention at home, that means that the quarters would look likely to be, you know, Montana. That 1-8 look, it would be Montana, and then the semis likely to be the winner of South Dakota State and Sacramento State, with Weber and JMU, you know, kind of knocking each other around on the other side of that main bracket. And the two teams on the outside looking in at 9 and 10 would be Furman and New Hampshire. Trev, you've had a chance to watch a little FCS football this fall. Thoughts here of this top 10?
I've gone on too long of a tangent. I don't mind it. It's not bad. I don't necessarily like that they just do one top 10 and then move on and don't announce another ranking until the playoff selection show, simply because the committee can't be held accountable for the decisions that they make now and when the decisions are made in the bracket. And at the end of the day, nobody can really control that other than the committee, because this is easy to me. Getting the top 10 down is easy to me. You can flip-flop teams. You can flip-flop Weber State and South Dakota State 3 and 4, and I don't think people would have an issue with it, because you know that teams have two, three more games to play. There's a lot of things that need to get sorted out. You're not held accountable for regionality per se. And I think that's why they put South Dakota State at 4 and Weber State at 2. I don't know. If I had to change one thing, it would be the New Hampshire-Illinois State deal. I know a lot of people are talking about that. I see why they put New Hampshire there, simply because they're 4-1 in the Colonial. Whatever. They've got two really bad losses. They're second in the Colonial. It's a very good FCS conference. So saying that we only have James Madison in the top 10 right now is kind of hard to justify, especially when you got Illinois State, who's what, got two Valley losses, you know, and they have a third loss at an FBS school. Well, they've lost to Northern Illinois, North Dakota State, and Northern Iowa. Okay, two of those losses you can kind of make a wash, whereas when you go and look at New Hampshire's schedule, they've lost to something like Holy Cross. I don't exactly know what their record is, but that doesn't seem like an FCS power to me. And I know they lost at Delaware. I know Delaware's sitting on about a 500 record or so now. So I would definitely flip-flop that, but I understand their reasoning for it. It's because of the conference record, and it's more of a what have you done for me lately. So it is what it is. I don't necessarily like it that it's a one-time release and then move on. I think it should be at least weekly, similar to how they do the college football playoff, because teams know what they're doing the prior week and how it affected them the following week. I think you can figure that out pretty quick. So really wish they would extend that and make it more. But also that's probably wishful thinking, because I just want more exposure for the subdivision as a result, because I do think it is good overall for the subdivision to be shown on ESPN2 on a random night. Likely the only college football game anybody's watching, especially on a Wednesday, and they get to see the FCS talk about. So it's more exposure for North Dakota State. It's more exposure for the subdivision, which we obviously have a lot of passion for. So all in all, I still think it's good that they're actually doing this, because they didn't do this all the time. So anything we can do to help out what we cover.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we're in, obviously both in the business of elevating FCS football. It's kind of as high as it can go. I will say this weekend's matchup might not go a long way to elevating FCS football. Western Illinois is not good. Let's just be upfront about that. Trev, do you have any Western Illinois stories that you're kind of fond of? I know everybody kind of, we'll say downplays Macomb and the trips to Macomb. Obviously, this game's in Fargo, but Western's kind of an oddball school, whether it's the Summit or the Valley. Not anyone's favorite team to play, but they had a guy by the name of Sean McGuire that at least partly, I think, collided
we're really searching
with
to talk
some
about some
with
Western
Illinois.
Aren't
what's
we?
Your favorite? What are some of your favorite?
I mean,
stories.
There's really nothing.
From your
I honestly think
Western.
My sophomore and junior year. I think that was our two-year hiatus with playing them. Someone please correct me if I'm wrong there, but we played them my freshman year. We played them my freshman year, and it was at Western Illinois. And I remember that because we won the game. Kind of sloppy play.
It's entirely possible.
We just came off the loss against Youngstown, I believe. I think so. Can't recall exactly. But played at Western, we won the game, and it got us in the championship room for the first time. For those of you that don't know, within the locker room at North Dakota State, we have what's called the championship room. And you are not allowed to enter that room to any capacity unless you have won a championship at North Dakota State. Whether it's a conference title or a national title, you have to have won a championship in order to enter that room. So with that, we beat Western. We clinched our first conference title in 2011 in the Valley, and it allowed us to go in that room. We had do not cross yellow tape all across the door that week. It's kind of a motivation. So that was pretty cool, ripping that stuff down and entering it for the first time. And then the other Western story is my senior year when John Crockett threw Carson Wentz a touchdown pass. We did not play very well that day. And Western actually, yeah, it was ugly. We were sloppy. We were slow. Just not exactly an environment we're used to playing in because it's so dull.
I remember that game.
And there's such a long walk from your locker room. It's just, there's no excitement. And we're obviously the Super Bowl on their schedule in 2014, being three-time defending champions. And I think we still had our win streak going on at that point. And there just did not seem like there was much to play for. It didn't feel like we needed to be there. It felt pointless. And we got punched a little bit, but we found a way. Croc threw a nice ball to the big redhead, and Levin caught it and got a W out of it. So, I mean, that's really all I have for Western, but this year, I don't think what I experienced in 2014 in Macomb will be anything nearly what happened on Saturday.
Yeah, and you know, you're right. We are struggling this week. One guy that won't miss is Colin Saunders. I'll tell you that right now. He was an absolute terror across that Western defensive line for three seasons. I remember watching him when he was a sophomore and pointing him out during the film review piece and saying, "Hey guys, this is going to be a pro." And I turned out being right. Absolute freak of athletic nature. I still don't understand how he does a standing backflip at like 330 pounds. But Colin is doing a good job with the Chiefs. Either they're started or just, I mean, he was definitely on the field for multiple snaps when I was there covering Green Bay. And, you know, always cool when somebody's doing the Valley Proud. And that's definitely what Colin Saunders is doing. But he's not there. And that's probably part of the reason why at 1-8, they just aren't very good. This is not a good Western team. I'm going to be very honest with you guys. The preview stuff for Western is not going to be incredibly in depth on my part. I don't imagine, we're going to hit 500, 600, 700, 800 words on the Western Illinois matchup situation, just because I think this is going to be a beatdown, and I would struggle to see it any other way. Trev, what are some of the keys to avoiding a letdown when you go out to a Youngstown? You know, folks like me predicting an 11-point win, folks like you not predicting a total and complete blowout, and then you're in a situation where you have a huge emotional high by blowing the doors off somebody in their house, and then you come home.
It's for tough,
1-18.
You really just have to create your own energy.
How do you not allow basically what happened to you guys in
Macomb
your senior year? How do you not allow that to happen?
The fans probably won't have the same energy that they did against Georgia Southern in 2012. I don't think that's any stretch to predict that. So you have got to create your own energy and understand that you're playing a team that has absolutely nothing to play for. They will throw the kitchen sink at you. They'll probably throw trick plays in early. They're not going to be very good at it, but the sooner you let them make a big play and feel like they belong, the more that "oh no" moment sets in your own brain, and you just create your own energy, do what you know how to do, and you do it every single day, and just go out and try to make a few plays early, and the rest will take care of itself. It's hard when you play teams like this because you understand that if they're at their best, you're at if they're at their best, you're at your best. You know, it's 4 or 5 possession type game minimum. So create your own energy, come out playing fast. You might make mistakes simply because you might not be as mentally into it coming off an emotional blowout win like at Youngstown last week, but you can lose. And these guys have nothing to play for, like I said, and have everything to gain. And you are their Super Bowl. So as long as you just come out and don't turn the ball over, don't give up 80-yard trick plays or bombs, you'll be just fine. And you'll go into the last 2 weeks looking to secure home field advantage.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that kind of has to be the expectation if we're being honest about it. Last question, Trev, it is Harvest Bowl this weekend, and you were one of those unfortunate folks who graduated the year before they came out. Your buddy Vra likes to give you a hard time. I just want to kind of ask you, as a former player, what goes through your head when they do a reveal like that? You had some pretty, big time stuff when they brought out the yellow jerseys. That was a major break in tradition. But you see something as cool as that flat green helmet, and what's kind of the chatter like from?
I will forever be jealous, and I will forever hold a grudge.
And against what's the talk about
Brian Gordon,
those Harvest helmets?
Who is now the associate AD with the Colonial. I will forever give BG a hard time. BG, I hope you hear this. I love you, man. We'll always be friends. Him, BG and I text every now and again, but we would badger him left and right to get new uniforms, and he would stubbornly tell us no. And then, of course, the year we leave, they give them the green helmets. And I'm very happy for the guys because they get to experience that. It's pretty cool. It's always fun having unique jerseys, especially at a place that's very tradition-driven. So it just makes fun and creates excitement for the players. But, yes, I will forever be bitter and forever jealous.
Yeah, I think that's, and it's a recruiting tool too, I think. It's something that I think the Kleiman era, that coaching staff, and it's certainly continued on with the guys they have now, but those are some guys that really started to realize how to attack social media, how to attack this kind of millennial generation, if you will, with the cool graphics and getting on social and uniform changes and combinations and helmets and things of that nature. I mean, you can even see it with the way that Chris is changing things up a little bit with another very traditional uniform spot in Kansas State and doing a really good job of getting kids to come there as well. Guys, I think that's going to do it for this edition of the Bison Report Radio podcast. We definitely want to thank you guys for listening. Obviously, if you've made it this long, we really, really appreciate that. The number one way to support Trevor and I in this venture is to become a VIP member of the Bison Report. And you know what? By the time you hear this, I happen to know that we're going to be running a phenomenal special at 24/7 Sports. We're going to be doing 2 months for the price of a dollar. Just an awesome, awesome, awesome value. And boy, something that just cannot be overstated. The next 60 days basically going to get you through the playoffs with a buck, a dollar. That's just a phenomenal, phenomenal value. The other thing that you can do for us for sure is to subscribe to this podcast. And wherever you get this podcast, whether it be Stitcher, Audio Boom, SoundCloud, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, whatever, give us a 5-star rating and a review.
I'm dead on. This is going to be the exact score.
I've been so pleasantly reminded that we need some score predictions.
I want steak dinner from everybody after I do this.
52-7, Trevor. What was so important that you needed to say this? All right. All right. Well, there you go. Now you've got our score predictions, ladies and gentlemen. One more time, VIP membership, 2 months for a dollar, $9.99 after that. But of course, after that, you can just upgrade to the annual membership if you like what you found. And that's going to be at a much lower rate than $9.99 a month. Thanks, everybody, one last time. And go Bison.